Hey everybody, this is Brent from Beam Me Up, Star Trek podcast. As you may know, Matt and I have finished recording the main run of the show. However, over the course of our 3.5 years of recording the show, we actually recorded several episodes that to this point have either gone unaired or they were exclusive to our Patreon page. Well, now that we're on the backside of the main show, we thought that it would be a great time to release those episodes to you guys out there, our listening audience. Plus, you never know when Matt and I may jump in with a random new episode.
The final frontier begins.
This is about saving the future of humanity.
This is a huge victory for the good guys.
You've never seen Voyager.
Commitment to this course of action is not emotional.
Scotty, beam us up.
Welcome to another episode of Beam Me Up, a Star Trek podcast. But this is not just any episode. Oh, no, this is a special Patreon exclusive extra viewing episode. You guys know me. I'm Brent.
And I'm Matt.
And if you're listening to this, once again, we owe you a big, huge thank you. You guys are our top tier supporters. You have been getting the early released episodes, and hopefully you're enjoying those as a sneak peek into what's coming up. You get them before everybody else does. And you also get these extra viewing episodes that we do once a month, and Matt gets to pick them. I give Matt a whole bunch of extra viewings, and he picks them. Matt,
yes.
Tell us what episode we're watching today.
Today we're watching Family Business, which you have told me, and I kind of guessed based on what I know that it's a Ferengi episode.
Yes.
And that's not something I've really experienced.
Yes. We did one Ferengi episode as a podcast, which was the one where they first say the word Dominion and you met the Grand Negus, Zek.
Yes.
The one with Pell, right? The Ferengi female who was pretending to be a male and all that.
That was it. Yep.
That's the one that we watched in the main feed. And I told you then, I was like, this is the only Ferengi episode we're going to do in the main run because we have to focus on what you now know as the Dominion story arc that's coming in. And so that's what you needed to know. But you saw this episode. Why do you get to pick these? I don't have any influence. It's ones that sound interesting to you. Why this episode, Matt?
I think I like Quark as a character. I like to think of myself as a little bit of a businessman myself, not like a Fortune 500, but more like entrepreneur. And that's something kind of how I see Quark, right? Always looking for ways to make another buck. And that's...
Let me ask you this. Do you find, we point out the rules of acquisition as we go through.
Yeah.
Do you find any of them that like are actually useful? Like that's actually a legit thing to do if you're a business owner.
Most of the time, no. Like sometimes I wonder like, where are you going with this, Quark? And like, I have to put myself in his shoes. And sometimes I think I just need to know more about the Ferengi to understand those rules. And that's, I mean, actually something we could talk about in this episode.
Sure. We talk about all 246 rules of acquisition. If you want to go
285,
285, oh, it's 285. Now they keep changing it.
285 is the number they mentioned in this episode.
All right. There you go. I got to tell you, and it's probably the one I quote the most, but it's the first rule of acquisition. Once you have their money, you never give it back. It's a good business thing, right?
That's fair. That's fair.
I always go back to the pizza business I used to run. You get a pizza business, you know, occasionally you screw up a pizza or somebody drops it or somebody's not happy with what they get. And people call and complain all the time. It's just a part of the job. Yeah. And your general thing is, great, I can either make you a new one and send it back out to you, or I'll put you in for a free one in the future.
Yep.
What I'm not doing is giving you your money back.
Yes.
Because once I have your money, I'm never giving it back.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I can say I've done that in my own businesses as well. It's like, yeah, I screwed that up. Well, okay, you just keep that thing that I sent you, and I will send you the right thing or another thing if I don't have the right thing, and we'll get this worked out, or I can give you store credit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that before many times.
Yeah, it works. So I do. I find the rules of acquisition actually are relatively useful when it comes to profit, making money.
it works. Profit.
It actually, you know, like there's another one that's like, never sleep with the boss's sister. That's good advice.
It's good advice. I don't care who you are. It's good advice.
Sure.
So anyway, today we're doing family business. I give this one my AKA. Matt, you get any guess what I'm going to call this one?
No.
Moogie.
Okay. That makes perfect sense.
Moogie. And this one, Quark and Rom have to return home to Ferenginar to deal with the fact that their mother, a female, has the lobes for business. And oh yeah, we get to meet Liquidator Brunt as well, Matt. Moogie. And now you know who Moogie is. Moogie joins. She's part of the first Ferengi family of Star Trek.
Okay.
You know, they get up there and they do their thing. So I think I've mentioned to you before sometimes at the conventions, the Ferengi family like get together and like do like a thing. So like there's Armin, and then there's Max Gradinchik, who plays Rom, and then Aaron, when he was still with us, who plays Nog, one of the two ladies who plays Ishta, because there's this one, and then another girl fills in her shoes later when they bring Moogie back. Yes, they do bring Moogie back. There's a little bit of a storyline that continues from this. So
fair enough.
Maybe we'll do those in future extra viewings. Matt, give us an overall thought on this episode. Like it, not like it?
I liked it. Mm-hmm. It gave me a much better understanding of Ferengis. Like there were some things that I've heard about before that were brought back up again that I didn't necessarily remember. And there are a few things that I don't know if I've heard before. And it was interesting, especially in regard to Ferengi females.
What were some of those things? Let's go ahead and dive into it. What were some of those things?
I didn't remember this, but I know it's been brought up before. Like Ferengi females aren't supposed to wear clothes.
Right.
I mean, the whole point of this episode that they're not supposed to make a profit.
Yep.
I don't know if I've heard that before, but it sounds kind of familiar. Like maybe that got brought up with Pell.
Yep.
And that's why they're not supposed to travel has been brought up before.
Right.
The one that I wasn't sure about, they're not supposed to talk to strangers or address strangers, or I'm not entirely sure what the rule is but like that seemed weird or different or something I hadn't necessarily heard before.
Yeah. So. I'm a little unclear if females are just not allowed to talk to males, in which case Ishta should not be talking to Quark and Rom.
Yeah.
Or if they're weird, not allowed to talk to males outside their family, which that would seem more normal to me.
Yeah. Cause I thought they mentioned something about talking to strangers, probably meaning people outside the house, even though like they'd kind of been introduced. I mean, not really, I guess, but yeah. But then, I mean, I also just got to see like inside Ferengi culture. Like this might be the first time I've been to their planet. And so I got to see a day in the life of a Ferengi, and
you got to see what Ferengi households look like.
Yes, which I have some questions about.
Okay.
But you have to pay for everything.
Oh yeah.
Everything. And it totally makes sense when they're all about profit. But some of the things, like one of my favorites, it's like, how much does the chair cost? It'll be like three strips to sit there. Okay. Then I'll stand. Well, that'll be one strip. Really? you're just going to charge me to hang around.
Right.
Okay.
Matt, I doubt you've ever actually done that. Have you ever watched Les Miserables?
No.
The stage show or listened to it?
No.
So there's a song. It's probably the most catchy song on the whole soundtrack. You might like it if you were to listen to it. It's called Master of the House. All right. And it so reminds me of the Ferengi. And it's this guy, he's basically like, he runs the tavern, he runs the hotel or whatever. And he's talking about all the ways that he finds to fix the bill and to charge it. If you can grab a YouTube clip of them doing the song, because they filmed it 1300 times, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But he's like, you know, you charge them for sleeping with the window, or it's like 3% for sleeping with the window open and 2% for sleeping with the window shut. it's that same kind of.
We're going to charge you no matter what. It's just a matter of how much.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But it's a catchy song. I like the song. If I was in Les Mis, I would want to be, that'd be the role I'd want to be, that innkeeper.
Okay.
Because he seems fun. But anyway, I got to tell you, Matt, Ferengi episodes are some of my favorite. And I'm sad that in the main run, we kind of have to leave the Ferengi off to the side.
Yeah.
I like them. They're pure comedy. And this one was actually, I don't know that this one was so much comedy as much as
it was a little more drama.
Well, this was a traditional Star Trek episode. I felt like it had the message and what you're trying to get across, and you're going to hold up a mirror to us as humans and go, this is what you look like sometimes. And you go, oh, that's kind of gross.
This felt like it could have been like a 1960s Star Trek episode.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exact. I have that in my notes a little bit later on. Absolutely. And I got to tell you, Matt, thinking about it today, the Ferengi might be my favorite Star Trek species.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that I think like Snape is your favorite Harry Potter character.
Sure.
Like not necessarily for all the good stuff, but just because of how beautifully complex they are. Because I got to tell you, yes, a lot of what they do and a lot of what they see to our enlightened mind today is very gross and disgusting and just base. But I think they have a terribly rich and deep culture as a people group that in many ways isn't necessarily actually bad. We just misunderstand it from our viewpoint.
Sure.
You know, and I think Quark gets that across to us in multiple episodes that we've even seen where he's like, look, you think that we're bad and this is that, but we've never done, you know, like we've never had nuclear wars. We've never done this. That's not us.
Yeah.
That's you. And it's like, oh, that's kind of... Anyway, let's get a couple spotlights on some people here real quick before we go in. Start by talking about Moogie. Moogie is played by a lady named Andrea Martin. She will later be replaced when she comes back by somebody that if I didn't tell you she got replaced, you'd never know that she got replaced.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things too with so much makeup.
Yeah.
Like unless she's a foot taller or
but the has voice a very
deep that, voice or yeah, something.
The like, voice and the acting
is you're not gonna notice.
It's almost spot on, Matt. But that's all. She's a stage actress.
Fair enough.
That's, you don't know her from anywhere else, but that's her. And I just point her out because she'll change later. I do want to talk about the director for this episode. You know him. You love him. He's your favorite character here on Deep Space Nine. Odo, it's Renee Aubergenois. I can never say this dude's name right.
No, I can't either.
Yeah. Renee's going to direct 8 episodes of DS9. I think I might've told you this when we did our spotlight specifically on him, but he's going to direct 8 episodes of Deep Space Nine. Prior to Deep Space Nine, he directed 2 other episodes of a show called Marblehead Manor. Never heard of it before.
Nope.
Those 10 episodes consist his entire catalog of directing. So I don't know that Renee qualifies as part of the Trek directing school, you know, like, cause he has some beforehand. He has some, during, he has several actually during, I think he might actually have more than Frakes had for Next Generation.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I think he did. I think he does with 8. I think Frakes only had 7, but this will be the end of his directing career. He doesn't have any more directing credits to his name after this, not this episode, but after Deep Space Nine. But the last guy I got to talk to you about is Liquidator Brunt.
Okay.
All right. Now, Liquidator Brunt is played by a guy named Jeffrey Combs. Matt, you want to burn this name into your memory.
I know you've mentioned him a few times.
Jeffrey Combs. We love Jeffrey Combs.
Okay.
And I'm including you in this because you're getting beamed up into the fandom. As a fandom, we like to a person, we all love Jeffrey Combs. Jeffrey Combs is in everything Star Trek.
Okay.
We have seen you and I have seen him before in various roles and I've pointed him out here and there. That's why you recognize the name. Mm-hmm. But here we get our first real good look at Jeffrey Combs. He plays a lot of different characters. We're going to love him in all of them because he's amazing.
Liquidator Brunt to have too many reoccurring appearances.
He has a couple. He's not super. He has enough that like he'll become an action figure, which I think means 3. Sometimes people get action figures off of one episode. So
I could see that. Yeah.
But he's so great. There's a point later where another character he plays in Deep Space Nine, and they like, keep in mind, he's just a recurring guest actor who puts makeup on. Mm-hmm. You know, he never even played in the same role. Like the two come face to face and have a conversation with each other, and they're so different as characters, like so different. But Jeffrey is just, he's great. He could play an episode where he was every single character in the episode and Trekkies would eat it up.
Sure.
Like we love this guy. We have seen him before. We will see him again. And we will talk more about Jeffrey Combs later. Fantastic actor. Love him being in the Star Trek universe. With that said, Matt, why don't we go through this episode? Family business. Now we've got A plot, B plot, character moments, shuffle them all around. You like your character moments first, Matt. So I will turn it over to you. What do you got for us of things that happened in this particular episode?
Well, we've talked about Sisko cooking before. Got to see it up close this time and found out he likes to cook when he has good news.
Yes.
Like random little side note. yeah. that Jake gives us. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like, how do you know that? Like, you always cook when you have good news, Dad. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. I appreciate Rom. I've always been kind of lukewarm on Rom, but there are a few moments throughout this episode that made me appreciate him a little bit more.
Yeah.
And one of them is just that he can make himself laugh. Quark isn't always so amused by it, uh-huh. but like he'll say something and then just kind of chuckle to himself as he walks away. Right. Like, that's awesome, Rom.
Oh gosh, brother. Yeah. Oh, Rom's great, man. I love Rom.
Yeah. I think part of it is I just haven't seen enough of Rom.
And you'll see more as we go on. They certainly feature him more. Yeah.
I made a note in here already. Like, I want to see a spinoff of Rom.
Ooh. Okay.
Like, we've had a little taste of, okay, he's not your average Ferengi.
Right.
Now we know he takes after his dad. Mm-hmm. So like they're different. They don't want to be the typical Ferengi. Mm-hmm. He does have his own set of skills. Mm-hmm. And
well, Nog told us about that, right? Exactly. He even told us, he's like, yes. My dad can fix anything. They've shown it to us in a few examples.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you got that to go on. Mm-hmm. You got what I called him in this episode. He's a behind the scenes problem solver. Like, yeah. it might not upfront seem like he's doing a lot, mm-hmm. but he's working behind the scenes and making things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, just the one big thing he did, he did a bunch of small things, I would argue, mm-hmm. throughout this episode to make it happen. But the one big thing was when he lied to both Quark and Moogie, mm-hmm. just to stop bad things from happening and get them back to talking. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was all Rom.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, Rom's not dumb.
And like, no one's going to necessarily mm-hmm. give him credit for that.
Right.
But that was all thanks to Rom. So, I mean, it is what it is. But then the other character note I had, which I found very odd, given I'm still struggling to understand the full relationship between Odo and Quark.
Okay.
Like I think I haven't figured it out sometimes, and then they go and do something. And in this one, when Quark's leaving the station, like, he goes straight to Odo and says, "Hey, make sure no one messes with my stuff."
Right.
And I'm like, you trust him to protect your stuff? Like, you're usually like at odds with him. Like, I wouldn't think he'd be the
but you gotta remember who Odo is, though. Odo is justice personified
by the books.
Yeah. So Odo will keep Quark's stuff safe just because you're not supposed to break into places
until he goes and supervises them breaking in.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were after their own stuff, though. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't stop them. Mm-hmm. But that too, apparently Rom's invention, that lock that they put on the door, mm-hmm. like, not only Odo knew about it, but then like Sisko seemed to know about it too. And I'm like, mm-hmm. this unbreakable lock that Rom put together, like, what?
Yeah.
Like, show me more of Rom. I want to see this. But yeah, that's what I got.
You're gonna have to remind me about showing you more of Rom, because there's a couple of really good Rom episodes.
Okay.
That unfortunately we're probably gonna skip on the main run. Some of them will cross over and you'll see them, but yeah. There's a couple of them out there. So maybe, who knows, Matt, maybe those are future extra viewings.
Could be.
Or maybe what we'll do is we'll kind of gather them all up and we'll do like one big, we'll call it the rom-com.
I was trying to squeeze like Rom marathon or something, but no, the rom-com. Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, hey, I do want to talk about a character moment. Bashir and O'Brien, you were just mentioning it. Bashir and O'Brien trying to break in. I've mentioned to you the buddy romance, uh-huh. that's budding between Bashir and O'Brien. You got a little bit of a glimpse of it here. What'd you think?
It was interesting. And I mean, this episode definitely had like a B plot, kind of, but in my mind, it almost had like multiple B plots.
Yeah. It's like, what's going on the station while Quark's gone?
Yeah, but it had all the different groups of people. Yeah. I think the main one obviously was like Sisko.
Yeah, and Sisko and Cassidy. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, as far as Bashir and O'Brien, it was fun. I mean, basically all we saw was them trying to pick a lock to get their dartboard.
Yeah.
But
because it's our dartboard.
Yes. It was amusing the whole time. And like, they're just trying to sit there, pick this lock. And if that's what you do with electronic locks like that, that's what they made it look like. But I mean, that's what we know, how we understand it. But it was amusing, not only because they were there and they were interacting with each other, but then, you know, Odo was there and then Cisco stopped by and all sorts of stuff. And it was just fun.
All right. So let's knock out the B plot. You mentioned that. Let's go ahead and knock that out of the way. And then we'll get over into the main chunk of the episode. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it. It's Ben and Cassidy. That's what I had to down is really the main B plot. Ben and Cassidy on their first date. I think I mentioned on the main run that we actually didn't see Cassidy until season four with that premiere with Way of the Warrior. And I was wrong.
Which is incorrect.
We actually saw her in this episode of season three.
It was interesting because like this episode kind of covers everything you were trying to tell me in the main run about how they met and who was trying to push them together and stuff. And like, yeah, we got Jake and we got Dax over here. And like, yeah, they all kind of want her to go. And like, I'm just seeing it unfold now. Yeah. It's like, we should just watch this episode.
It's a good episode. It's a fun episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what, I mean, so yeah, Ben and Cassidy, they go on their first date. Cassidy's can hold her own against the station commander at this point.
I don't think she has to do very much. Like he's the one stumbling.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, they're both kind of awkward until they hit baseball.
Right.
And then it's like sparks flying all over the place. It's like, where have you been all my life? And it totally makes sense now. Like the comment he makes in the other episode we saw about, we're going to watch game seven of the 19,
whatever,
World Series. And I'm like, okay, after seeing this episode and how they react to baseball, like, got it.
It's their thing.
Like, that's a hot date right there. Like, I mean, at first, when I heard that comment earlier, it's just like, oh, and I know Cisco likes baseball. That's his thing.
That seems weird.
I don't know how Yates is going to feel about that, but sure, go for it. Right. But no, they're both totally into baseball. What do you know?
There you go.
And who knew that like baseball had died? Like,
right.
I'd be okay with that.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I never really got into baseball. I only went to games because my friends were going and we'd sit in the stands and talk and it's like, oh, it's the game over. Okay, let's go.
I'm only into baseball right now because my kid plays and I coach.
Sure.
Like I don't follow any, I'll check scores at the end of the day. And that's about the limit of my following. Like, I'll watch the World Series for sure. But outside of that,
in the playoffs, sure. I'll root for them. Yes. Yeah. They're quote unquote my team. Yeah. I don't really have a team.
Yeah. I'm a Rays guy, but I enjoy, like, we'll go to the, we have our local minor league team here is the Jumbo Shrimp, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. You want to know why we're the Jumbo Shrimp? Because Jacksonville apparently was the birthplace of the American shrimping industry.
Who knew?
But anyway,
yeah, that's a weird one.
I think my favorite minor league team is from Alabama, the Montgomery Biscuits.
All right.
And their mascot is a biscuit with legs and eyeballs and arms.
Fantastic.
It's awesome. You should Google it.
I hope they serve biscuits at the stadium.
Oh, they better. Biscuits and gravy. Oh, in Alabama. Yeah. Oh my God.
They gotta. Yeah.
Oh, hey, by the way, go ahead.
I was just going to comment more about baseball, but go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if you're ever in Savannah, Georgia, get yourself some biscuits and gravy in Savannah, Georgia. Oh my word, son. Oh my word. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, part of the reason I think I've never really gotten into baseball is for the majority of my life, my quote unquote team, the Brewers, have been crap.
Sure.
Like there's been nothing to root for. It's only in recent seasons that they've actually been getting to the playoffs and getting close to the World Series and stuff. I'm like, fine, whatever. But yeah, growing up, like I did go to some minor league games, like not anywhere local to where I was, but where my grandparents were, where my dad grew up in Appleton, like they had the Appleton Foxes. They've changed now to the Appleton Timber Rattlers or something like that. I'm like, really? The Foxes are so much cooler. Like I still have one of those little mini bats for the Appleton Foxes. And now it's like a collector's item because they don't exist anymore. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, I think I have a baseball signed by some old Brewers too, but you know, they didn't really go on to be anything big. So whatever. I did my thing as a kid, but never really stuck.
There you go. Hey, I want to talk real quick. Just a little production note, little hat tip, I think, here. The name of the planet that Cassidy's brother is playing baseball on, Cestus 3. Yep.
Yes.
We have heard of Cestus 3 before.
It sounded familiar.
Yes. You have to go all the way back to the original episode, The Arena. It's the one with the Gorn.
Okay.
And if you remember, the plot line of that movie was before Kirk and the Gorn captain got into a fight, the Gorn homogeny had gone in and wiped out all life on a particular planet. And the Enterprise showed up and they wound up beaming down. And Kirk did this, they went through like this bombing sequence, and Kirk did this weird thing where he was running and trying to jump around. Anyway, that planet was Cestus 3.
Okay.
So it's the same planet. And so this is 100 years later, and they have rebuilt it. And people that have gone out there are baseball fans, apparently. And like enough that they've created a league.
Yes, with six teams.
Yeah. And they're trying to field out two more.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, how many people you got on a baseball team? It's not nine. Is it 25? I think on a roster, something like that. Maybe 15 on a roster. You have enough people.
Their rules over there.
Yeah, sure. Say you have 10, you know, somebody gets hurt or whatever.
They don't have designated hitters. So
they don't have designated hitters. Say it's 15. Cause you got to have a pitching rotation if they're playing right. 15 people, you know, you're talking a couple hundred people there.
Sure.
By the time it's all said and done, plus everybody else. And, you know, they're probably playing in some sort of stadium where people are going and watching them if it's a thing. But
do you think that if they're just starting up baseball again, like the people playing this game are, it's like going to watch a Little League game?
I would say these guys are probably pretty good at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't get the feeling that it's just starting. I feel like this has probably been going for a while. And by a while, I mean 5 to 10 years.
I mean, they are broadcasting their games.
They are. Oh, yeah. Very true. Very true. So you've got people that are calling the games, you know, up in the radio booth and everything, and they're going through the process of doing all that. So, yeah, I'd say the same. But anyway, the whole point, Cestus 3 is the planet that the Gorn destroyed. One of the planets, actually, because they destroyed a bunch of them leading up to the fight between Kirk and Gorn Captain Dude.
Yeah. So, okay. The last question I have, though, about the Z8s thing.
Sure.
Like, everybody seems to know, and they make the joke about it, like, well, yeah, Jake just told everybody because he's super interested, but a couple times she's even referred to as, like, Jake's friend. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird. Like, how do we know, or do we care how Jake actually met her in the first place?
Nope.
Like,
Jake, we do know Jake goes and he watches the ships come in and he watches them dock, and he's just around the station. So somehow he's met her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But we don't know.
But like, part of me thinks that he overheard her saying something about baseball, and that's why he's pushing so hard.
Fair.
But I still don't know. Like, I wasn't sure if there was something deeper, like how they met. It's like Yates saved Jake from being crushed by a container, and so they met, and I don't know.
Both ideas are completely plausible.
Fair enough.
There you go. All right. So Matt, with that, let's talk about the A plot. Liquidator Brunt from the FCC shows up to shut down Quark's bar with a writ of accountability, forcing him.
FCC?
FCA? Did I say FCA?
FCA.
FCA. Forcing Quark to answer for the crimes of his mother, who has been earning profit. And so Rom and Quark return home to find their mother fully clothed and talking to any male she well pleases, and in no way, shape, or form willing to admit that she's doing anything wrong, and she's really, really good at what she does. Eventually, her mother's nature wins out, and she plays her part, and in reality, she's getting one over on Brunt and Quark by only confessing to about a third of the profits that she's actually made and keeping the rest.
Mm-hmm. That is the story. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you how weird it is to, I mean, just obviously because it's the opposite of our culture, but to see someone shielding their eyes so they don't have to look at someone who's wearing clothes.
Right.
Like, it just feels so backwards. But I get it. I mean, that's their whole point, is like, this is different. This is how they run. This is how they operate. But it's a weird thing.
But it's also weird. I mean, like, the human body is beautiful. Let's just say that.
Sure.
This is an old lady. Mm-hmm. Not typically the body that most people want to see naked.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So there is that part where you're like, get undressed. And then honestly, let's be honest. It was mom.
Uh-huh.
It was mom. Like, get undressed now. And then, like, you're going to put his head down in her lap and everything. And you're like,
that's the thing that seems weird too, to me. Like,
yeah.
Like,
it's supposed to
your mother to undress. And I'm like, Okay, sure. I guess that's your custom. That's how, like I said, that's how things operate there. It's not weird to them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that's not to jump ahead to the Star Trek messages, but mm-hmm. I think that's something that this episode forces us to look at in a bit of a, maybe not even comical, maybe even a little bit of a gross way of, you know, what seems gross to you is perfectly normal to them.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be for them.
I mean, like one of the easiest things to compare that to, and I don't know if I should be comparing these things, but like, just think about food. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can even talk Ferengi food if you want. What they put out there with all the grubs, and then they talked about like the females usually chew them up for them. And I'm like, okay, that's also kind of weird. But I mean, just thinking about different foods that different cultures eat. Mm-hmm. And different, I mean, I've been told, you know, some cultures eat horse and some cultures eat dogs and some cultures eat grasshoppers. Mm-hmm. And all of those things I would kind of cringe at a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. No, that seems kind of gross to me.
Right.
But for them, it's everyday normal. Yep. Here we go. Yes, this is what we eat.
Mm-hmm. And they think it's delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. The chewing up the food first.
Yeah.
Okay. So Matt, we just watched The Visitor. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's a line when I think it's Commander Nog at that point comes to visit Jake and they meet Corinna, Jake's wife at the time. And she's like, you're probably still having your dates chew up the food. And he goes, I've long gotten a pass to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I do remember that.
So there is an episode that I think you've missed. It wasn't too long ago where Jake and Nog try to go out on a double date. And Nog like bows up and like throws his Ferengi culture around like, chew my food for me, lady. Uh-huh. Take those. Why are you talking? Don't be talking. And why are you wearing clothes? Like Nog was all Ferengi. And Jake's like, Nog, you're screwing this up. Cause they were like two human girls, right? Nog, you're screwing this up. And Nog's like, I'm screwing it up. You're the one screwing it up. Like they were, you know, kind of going back and forth on it. Obviously that was a B plot of the episode, but yeah, totally happened in an episode. Absolutely.
That totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a whole big part of it. It's like just their culture is different. Mm-hmm. And I got to see that kind of firsthand here. So
sure.
But I think this also plays into, actually it was our last extra viewing, wasn't it, with Dax?
Okay. What about it?
And we went into the whole, you know, can you hold her responsible for the crimes of one of her previous hosts?
Okay.
Whereas here, the Ferengis are like, oh yeah, you're being held accountable for the activities of Ishka, daughter of Adred, wife of Keldar. And like the charge is like being improper supervision of a family member.
Right.
And I'm like, the biggest difference is they didn't bat an eye at that. Mm-hmm. Like Quark's like, oh no, what did she do? Not like, you can't hold me accountable for that. Like he's totally about, okay, yes, I understand the rules. Mm-hmm. Let's go deal with this.
Is it less weird if you flip the age of the person around? Like if I get a phone call from my kid's principal at school saying, hey, this is what your kid did. You need to come deal with this. What did he do now? Okay, I'll be right there. Like, it's a little bit like that.
Sure. Yeah. You know? And
because as a parent, right? Like, I'm responsible. That
would make sense in our culture, right?
Right. But for them, it's
age doesn't matter.
Right.
It's male or female.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, and it's part of what this episode is, I think, trying to get across. And I think this is where we start crossing over the Star Trek messages a little bit with it too, is, you know, I mean, obviously the point here is gender doesn't matter when it comes to skills and worth and value.
Yes.
Right. Like that, that's what they're trying to get across here. And they're showing you this ridiculous mirror, because I mean, let's face it, even in our own culture today, Matt, there is still, I mean, there's the pay disparity between men and women for doing equal jobs. There are things, my wife, your wife is too, actually, a professional out there in the world. And I don't know how often yours talks to you, but mine certainly, you know, there's issues where she comes back and she's like, I think this happened because I'm a girl, or they talk to me this way, but they never talk to any of the men like that. You know, like there's just certain things. And I don't know. I can't experience it. All I can do is, man, that really sucks. Like, you know, like I'm all I can do is be there for her, because that's, I don't experience it. But and certainly we know the past. Like, we know our culture's past, right? Yeah. Of where we've come
and to this. That's where I was getting at. It's like, this feels like they're speaking to 1950s America saying, hey, this is dumb. Do something about it. But then, like you said, too, maybe on a slightly lesser scale, we're still dealing with some of these problems today.
Sure.
They are still speaking to 2010 America.
And let's say there are still cultures across this world where the divide is based on the gender, on the gender gap. And, you know, while you and I might sit here and look at it and go, man, if you're limiting the women in your country, you are limiting half the brain power of your country, because you probably have some amazing women there in your own country. I think the other side of that is, well, one, we can't tell other countries, or can we, that their culture is wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, no, we'll just let Star Trek do it for us, which is why the whole world needs to sit down and watch Star Trek together, Matt. You know, say that here all the time. But I think there's that's the question. That's the line for me, is what is morally right and wrong that is ubiquitous across all nations? And what can you let be attributed to just cultural differences?
Yeah.
And say that it's okay because it's just a different culture. And I don't know that this episode gives us that line, but I think you have to deal with both questions throughout the course of this episode.
And I think it's a little bit harder with circumstances like this, as opposed to, I think we've seen in other cultures in Star Trek, when it's like, well, they did this, so now they must die. Mm. And then it's like, okay, well, there I'm going to draw a little bit more of a line, because I feel this is going to sound bad no matter how I put it. But I guess I would say I value life more than rights, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's about as clear as I'm going to get. Because if they said, okay, you made a profit, so now we're going to kill you.
Right.
Like, I think I'd have more of a problem with that than, okay, you made a profit, well, that's illegal, so we need you to confess to it and tell us who helped you, and we'll go from there. Thanks. Like, okay, that's something I still don't necessarily agree with it, but it's your culture. Maybe there's some merit to it somewhere that I'm missing. But if you were to say, no, we're going to kill you, I'm like, I don't think so. Does that make sense?
I mean, that's where the question comes down to, right?
Yeah.
And I think you got to deal with it. Okay, let's go to what they're actually trying to say and the big message. And we certainly see this from the thing. Women are just as good at men, just as good as men. And they make the comparison for us in the show. Moogie and Quark are more of the same type of person, where Rom and his father, both men, are completely inept on one thing. Yep. But what I love is that Moogie still values both of them. Like, she sees their value regardless of their gender, and neither one of their value was in what profit they could bring. Exactly. She's like, he was a wonderful father and a wonderful husband.
He was great at what he did. He just sucked with money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that in their culture, money was basically all that mattered.
Well, and that goes back to the Nog thing, right? Because that's what Nog told Sisko was, I don't want to end up like my father. My father has a low one for business. He's an amazing engineer. He could be a chief engineer on a starship, but he can't get past his cultural upbringing.
Yeah.
Which, that's a whole other thing that I want to talk about in just a moment for Rom, are the places where he's actually more enlightened, but he's still dealing with the cultural influences that he's grown up with, because it keeps him bound in many ways. But yeah, I mean, we hear about that, but the value, your value as a person actually isn't in the money that you bring in. Your skill sets may be different, and that's okay. And it doesn't necessarily, it's certainly not reflected in your gender.
No,
it's reflected in your value as a person and who you are as a person. A very Star Trek message. As you said, this is a TOS episode, right?
Yeah.
It's a TOS
absolutely.
Episode. Yeah.
Yeah. The messages are there. They're very apparent. And like I said, that I was able to experience a Ferengi episode at the same time. So
there you go.
It was cool.
There you go. All right. Well, I want to talk about Rom real quick, to what I was just referencing. And like, there was the one thing I just said, but the other one too, like back when Rom seems pretty cool with a lot. Like, he's even okay with his mom talking to people and wearing clothes. But like, when it's just them and their thing, like, he's still uncomfortable about the fact that she's in clothes. You know, and she takes it off. She's like, will it make you feel better? And he goes, yeah. And she's like, okay, I will for you, Rami. You know, yeah. And she.
And at first, like, I think you're right. It basically comes down to he's still dealing with things. Mm-hmm. But at first I thought it was, oh, this is Rom coming to the rescue. Like at first mm-hmm. I thought that was going to be the Rom problem solver that I saw. Like, that's what first sparked the idea mm-hmm. is when he got away from Quark and it's like, no, I'm going to handle this my way. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was going to go in and make his mother understand what was going on a little bit better. And sure. And get him to basically do what Quark was trying to get her to do, uh-huh. but his way. Mm-hmm. It didn't quite turn out that way, mm-hmm. but that's where I thought that was going.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, having seen the rest of the episode, then you're totally right.
Yeah. And it keeps Rom in his place. So I was just having a conversation the other day with a friend of mine, a very, very good friend of mine who's Black. And, mm-hmm. and I grew up in the middle of Kentucky where, to be frank, some ideas about race are very backwards. Many, sure. many ideas of race are very backwards. And there was an idea that was sort of like was just told to me a lot as a kid.
Okay.
And I don't want to repeat it here because I don't want to put it out there, but just suffice yep. to say, I was told an idea as a kid and it was repeatedly. And even as a kid, I went, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. That's stupid. And I was having a conversation with my friend the other day. And I was like, you know, there's been this thing that's been going on that every time I see it, like today, like now, I think back to when I was told this as a kid, and it just yeah. further proves how dumb that was. Sure. And my friend looked at me and he went, man, I hate that you had that instilled in you that even though you're against it, you still deal with it. Mm-hmm. Like it still comes up in your brain. Like it's even a thing for yeah. you because it was something you grew up with. It's something that was instilled in you and your mind is actively fighting against this thing that was actually instilled in you. Mm-hmm. And you don't even realize that it's there. And good on, you know, I mean, he was trying to compliment me. He's like, good on you. And man, that sucks that that's even in your brain.
Yeah.
You know? And I was having that thought watching this episode with Rom, who he looks like he's cool with his mom having clothes on, but he still kind of makes him feel better if she doesn't, you know?
Yep.
And man, I wonder how often that happens for people that
I think far more often than you think.
Yeah. Like,
or than you realize, because I think it's stuff like that people deal with and internally, yeah. but they don't talk about.
No, because they know like they're woke or whatever phrase you want to put to it. Right. Like they know, and they know that it's gross and disgusting, mm-hmm. but the thought still has to flit across their mind for whatever reason.
But that's just one more reason why mm-hmm. when we say everybody needs therapy,
right?
Like everybody should go to therapy. You've heard people say that.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly one of the reasons why, mm-hmm. because you have those things that are flitting through your mind that you may or may not even realize. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe you're fighting them, but
where has it affected you that you don't even realize?
Yeah. That's a constant battle that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And that's mentally taxing.
Everyone should go to therapy. Everyone should watch Star Trek.
It's a place to start.
I got it twice. Yeah. In the same episode. But yeah, so I mean, that's it. And I love at the end how Ishka gets one over on Brunt and Quark, you know, and she feels perfectly okay to tell Rom, because apparently Rom can keep a secret. Mm-hmm. So good on him. You know, she's like, oh, I hated giving up a third of it, but you know, I still have 2/3 left. And they're like, well, this is a fortune. This third.
Yes.
Like, geez, what did you
that's
do?
Crazy. Exactly. And well, yeah, when Quark comes up and tell, like, I like to think that Quark is doing okay for himself.
Sure.
Like, obviously well enough for him to live on, and probably mm-hmm. Rom mostly too, or at least mm-hmm. he pays his salary.
Right.
And then he's given this stipend to his mother.
Right.
Who she admits is a pretty good stipend.
Yeah.
So,
which, by the way, I'm sorry, I'm going to pause that thought. She's making all this profit and she's keeping the stipend.
Yeah.
Like, mom's Ferengi through and through. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, you can give me this money, I'll keep it.
But the point being, Quark is making enough to do all that. Mm-hmm. And he sees this amount and it's like, I've never seen so much money in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going to put me out of business. There's no way I can repay this. Mm-hmm.
And it's only a third.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, it's ridiculous that there's a reason they don't give us numbers. They just want our imagination to run with it and let this to be like timeless.
Right.
But yeah, that's crazy.
All right, Matt. Well, wrapping it up then, did you have anything else here on the episode of Family Business or as it relates to Ferengi, Ferengi culture, Ferengi anything, or just Deep Space Nine in general?
I think I did want to point one more thing out. Mm-hmm. It's a side of Quark that I don't know that I've seen before.
Okay.
But there was one point when Quark was literally begging for his mother to basically just confess. Yeah. And between that scene when he's maybe was on his knees even begging, like, I mean, he looked really almost in distress, like trying to get this done. But then also towards the end, when he actually says like, I love you, like just, I've never seen this humble, almost sensitive side of Quark. Like usually he's just business, profit. I'm a Ferengi. This is what we do. And I mean, you could have fooled me knowing that Ferengis have feelings. He never seemed to care about Rom's feelings. So I don't know, whatever, but it's, there's obviously something deeper to him.
Yeah.
He has another side.
And I think that's, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think that in the same way that Snape is your favorite Harry Potter character, the Ferengi really might be my favorite Star Trek series, because there really is this deepness to them as a people. And, you know, regardless of what all they've just been through with his mom, like at the end of the episode, that's his mom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like for all that they've been going through, it's just mom. And honestly, I think in that moment, even without her clothes or whatever, or no, she actually had clothes on, didn't she? She had clothes on with Quark, not with Rom.
Anyway. Most of the episode, I think the only time she took them off, no, there are two times, once for Rom and once at the end when she was confessing.
Right. But then she put it back on like right away.
Oh
like,
yeah. As soon as he left. Yeah. She put him back on. But
regardless of all of that, at the end of the day, what we all recognize, it's mom. It's just mom. And that love transcends space and time and species. And it's so recognizable. And I thought they played it great. Like for Armin, the way Armin played that, like he's so, you know, what's the word? Like gruff with her most of the time that he then just melts like a little boy.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. All right, Matt, anything else?
I just found one other note here that I had to laugh at.
Okay.
Like it was the beginning of realizing that Ferengis charge for everything.
Okay.
Like I would love to charge people an admission fee to my house.
Right.
Like that'll keep people away. Like, awesome. That's right. That's a perfect way to keep people out of my house. But on top of the admission fee, they also had to sign a legal waiver. And I found that very interesting. Like, I guess we kind of do that to some extent without really thinking about it. Like we're checking boxes for terms of service and everything online nowadays. But I guess maybe like the closest thing we have is like if you go to a sporting event, if you ever actually take the time to read the fine print on your ticket, that's basically like a legal waiver saying, hey, yeah, we won't sue anything. Right. But yeah, can you imagine having to do that anytime you went over to someone's house? That'd be crazy. But it maybe prevents a lot of lawsuits. So maybe they're not so crazy.
All right, Matt. Well, I have just two notes for you that we didn't quite get to talk about today.
All right.
First, do you remember seeing like the little Ferengi toys that Ishka pulled out at some point in the show? Like they're like little Ferengi action figures, or like they were in Quark's, or maybe they were like just in his room or something like that. I don't exactly remember where they were, but those were actual Ferengi toys that were sold from the TNG era.
Okay.
Like from back then, like they just went to the store, bought some Ferengi toys and went here. That's awesome. Like put new clothes on them and said, here's your Ferengi toys. So cool. Quark could have been playing with his own action figure. Armin could have from back then. The other thing is let's talk about the architecture of the Ferengi home.
I did weigh one note about that.
Okay.
Like design your houses however you want.
Sure.
But the doorways. Every single person had to duck.
Sure.
And I mean, Ferengis are short already, but if every single person has to duck, make them taller. I don't get it. Like I don't mind round doorways. I don't mind the rest of the architecture, however they did it. And you maybe have some more notes you want to talk about, but that bugged me. Like the only people that are getting through there are apparently, you know, Ferengi children, because everybody we saw come through there had to duck.
Or
I don't get it.
Or hobbits.
But I'm pretty sure hobbits don't have to duck when they go through their doors.
It's true. It's true. So the way they designed these houses, the production crew did, was they wrote them and designed them to look like hobbit holes.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because, and it's just their homage to J.R.R. Tolkien. The writers, the writers of Star Trek are big Tolkien fans.
But I think they made them the same size as hobbit holes.
They probably did.
Unfortunately, Ferengi are bigger.
Yeah. Well, but they all do kind of bend over a little. Well, actually, no, Brent stood pretty straight up. But like Rom bends over a bit, Nog bends over a bit. He towered over
the other ones a little bit. But yeah. I mean, even when like Quark and Rom were leaving, we saw them like double over almost to get under the doorways. And that just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, it's true.
Come on, Quark, take care of your house. You told us multiple times it's your house.
That's how they do it, man. Just how they. Hey, it's not wrong. It's just different, Matt.
Well, no wonder they're always hunched over.
Right. I could do it. Certainly could not do it. Oh my gosh. Did you also happen to notice that it's always raining on Ferenginar?
I wondered about that.
Yeah, always.
That's a thing.
Yeah, always. It never stops raining on Ferenginar.
Because I saw them go out into the rain a few times, and even when they're inside, you could like hear the rain outside. And I'm like, man, that sucks. So that would really suck. So do they even have sun then?
They would have to have a sun somewhere.
But they never see it if it's always raining, unless the rain doesn't come from clouds on their planet. I don't know how that works.
I mean, it may stop like every once in a while, but it's almost always.
Sure.
Almost always. It's just the way it's described. So,
yep.
All right, Matt, that's really all I had for this episode. So, I'll bring it down to you. I know you've already said you like this episode. I certainly get the feeling you enjoyed this episode. So, you watch it again. Did you just enjoy getting to watch this episode outside of the main run?
This was great. Yeah. I'd watch this or episodes like it anytime. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Matt, I think that's going to wrap us up here for this extra viewing episode of Beam Me Up. Thank you once again to all of our patrons out there supporting the show. And we hope you guys also enjoyed this episode. And if you didn't watch this one first, you probably want to go watch it because it's just a fun episode and it'll make you think.
Go watch it.
It's good. Absolutely. Well, you guys know where to get Matt, you know where to get me, you know where to get the show. At Beam Me Up Pod across all the social medias and .coms and all that sort of stuff. Matt, what are we doing next month?
We'll find out. I'll tell you when I know.
We'll find out. We'll talk to you guys then. Until next time, guys, live long and prosper.